It's Donnelly real late. Now, we've got a bit of confusion in both our minds, I think, as to the chronology of events. But the next thing that we'll want to look at, either way, is the Arnhem, involvement in Arnhem, before Aiken. Now, what... Argo.
We went into... What was the first place?
Eindhoven, you said.
Eindhoven, yeah. Went through that with no opposition there at all. Because we went through the streets and I seen this big cigar factory, you know, and it was never bombed. We wondered why it wouldn't bomb. You know, the Irish wouldn't bomb British interests on. But the Germans no longer come about and started bombing. However, we went through there and we went up to Nijmegen. And then we got to Nijmegen, we were sent somewhere else. Now, I can't remember what it was, but we were doing a bit of fitting about there and we were told to come back and make towards Arnhem. Because the Guards Armour Division were in difficulties. But the difficulty was the fact that they plugged the fuse and the holes were flooded. And they couldn't get off the road. And they were just really sitting ducks from 88 millimetres. However, then we did get round, and I don't think we went the straight way up there with the guards. But the time we did get there, because they say, we met the survivors who had swum across from Arnhem. And they told us they'd been getting hell. But apparently, we found out after the Armour Division had been resting there. The German Armour Division had been resting there. Which was unknown to us. So it must have been from there then we went up from there to Aachen.
Yep.
And when we were at Aachen, that's when they were stopped for the snow, and the Germans made a we came across one day with what, six planes, I think. We said this would be our last fling, I think. But, they just dropped bombs in the way. And that's when we came back to England on the week course, because we've got out of action for a month, we were told.
So tell me about this course. This would be round about December you were sent back on the course.
Yes, because, it was only taking us a week's leave, he said. So we went back to Bovington, and this young officer inside was, as I said, the next first one, he'd been wounded. And he said, what the hell are you boys doing here? So Cockney told him, I said, oh, well. He said, be it's only for a week, he said. And this is for the 11 boys, it's definitely for, you know. See you overnight. They'd be going to do the course and criticise it. So we did, and it was a very well organised course, and we did about it. It was meant for men not to come. This was only to give us a week's leave.
And what did you think of the course? I mean, because you were very experienced, and Conky Harland was even more experienced.
So
think of it?
Well, we thought it was very good indeed. Now, one, because Mark Beaton, I'm forgetting it because I won the competition. You were sitting in front of, you're sitting behind, an 80-year-old girl drove the thing, and sat in the front, and you were sitting behind it in a canopy cover with a 19-foot. And it was like a treasure map. You told you, go to map reference, go to such and such reference, and let me know what you find there. So you went, and you filled the map reference, you went up a small bridge, so you go to small bridge. Then, change net to such and such a figure. So if you didn't get your right net, you didn't get the message. So you got the next message, and it was to say, go to such and such a place, and William Dale has been dead for some time, and where was he buried? So I was only in my reference, and it's just a bloody wall, and this big pool, it said, there's nothing in it. So I said, there's something I'm going to look to, the bloody cemetery. So we go down the front gate, and there was this first thing, it was a really bloody guy. So you put that down. And I've got a 6 foot at that. So when we got back, it was, if you need to talk about it, it was good, quite good for your wireless operating and your map reading. That was 2 minutes in the using this. I don't know if it was very well done. Because you've got a map reading tape and you're watching the way you've been. It's difficult, sorry, if you're going up the road, you see it in front of you, but you see it from the back. And it was well organized, of course. And then the gunneries, well, of course, you're not going to have gunneries, you're only here for a week. But then we went and we leave. That was the hell out there because you went back home and you're good, and then you went back to what you were. And I remember going on a high street, Kakori here, and that's a cigarette, and then going back to that bloody light out, he says. I said, okay, that's good, buddy, but you know, I think you're at the front line, you're in the school, and nobody ever. He said, you could see, we seem to be a plane.
How did you feel about, you know, what you said? It affected your morale, did it?
Yeah, that's your real thing. I'll come back to this, you know, and it's getting me in the end.
So what happened when you got back?
Got back, well, we just got a bit, then we went through back, and and Germany.
What about were you? So you were. Where were you during the Arnhem campaign? Ardennes campaign, when the Germans attacked.
We were sent back to Ardennes from Arnhem, and we went down to the Ardennes, and there you got the story that the young lieutenant. We stopped there. We stopped the advance, you know. But how the Germans were dressed up as the Americans were telling us, and they were coming down the road.
Were you in action there?
Yeah.
What do you remember of that?
Not very much, but I thought it couldn't be as low as there was lots of woods, heavy woods, and the Germans had done well, but as you say, it was a place we didn't go there. We stopped the fighting, and we got told afterwards that they'd gone through there. That's when Montgomery took over, and that was thing for Montgomery, but if they came over then, I think the Germans would have got through to the coast, and that's the 2 hours up. So, that was stopped that. And the Ardennes was just one mad dash. And the Germans had come through, and then the youngsters they didn't have much sense because they were dressed up as bloody. Well, that was true, but apparently, one or two had been dressed up as youngsters and got through. That was all, and then we went back up to anti Germany.
What do you remember of the crossing of the Rhine?
Well, crossing the Rhine to us was pretty good because it was we went across the Rhine. And where did we cross from down Venlo?
How did you cross?
We crossed by. Wait a minute. The Bailey Bridge we crossed. I think it was the Bailey Bridge we crossed.
And what about operations in Germany itself?
Well, once we got to Germany, it was one mad dash. Now, we were told if to go like the Hammers, and if you meet any opposition at all, don't engage it, get round it, get on with it. Honestly, we were going through a hell of a piece, and we were getting towards Hamburg.
So, what were you fired on much?
Yes, we had a big action in Hanover. I remember that because we were coming to Hanover, and infantry have been trying to get it. It was a young youth, German youth school on the top of this hill. And their infantry, that was the Queen's Brigade, had suffered a lot of casualties at this school, the young SS. So we were told to get around the back of Hanover on this road out of Hanover. So the colonel lined us all up along this road in the woods by the side of the road. He said, now we get whatever comes out of Hanover. Well, if you know, I mean, I'll never forget, there was a lovely day, very quiet, no wireless communication at all. And we had this whistle, and there were about 40 lads, young lads, on bicycles, bazookas on the right, and that one on the bars, and second row, quite a thing. So the colonel said, don't fire until I get 16 degree door. And then he got in the car and just fired from both sides, and they were just annihilation. Just annihilation. Because you say, well, these boys give out to that man the same treatment to the other hand. I mean, they never stood a chance. But as he said, if they got away, they could cause enough of havoc. We were soft skins coming up behind us, you know, this is the trouble. These guys, okay, they're no thing against us. What if they got in the wood? The bazookas and whatnot, they could get a hell of a mess with petrol, lorries and whatnot.
And anything else about that Hanover operation?
No. I mean, we just...
The main thing was just ambushing these SS.
Our brigade suffered cut heavy cars, we were told it was the wireless, and this was it, get some coming out. So then we were told to make for as fast as we can, and if we got any opposition at all, to bypass it. So we did this. And we were getting near Hamburg. And at that time, every bridge, any bit of bridge we get was blown up. So we got the bridge across near Hamburg, the colonels. Just perhaps about this one, just outside. And the conquerors were going across this field and the front. We looked up. I said, come to this bridge in the front of us, seems to be okay. Come to that. I said, it's not blown up anyway. He said, no, it's not. So we called up Cornelius, we called him come up about my time. He says, nice, he says, it looks all right. He tells you what's happening, he says, walk up on your feet, he says, I'll look underneath to see if there's any charges on him. I said, okay, well, I'm just going to go on with him. I can do this, I mean, I could have been out on the town. He says, walk on your feet, I said, a sniper could have put me off. So however, I got off the town. And here was the autobahns, you couldn't see the autobahns. So there's a slope like that on the other side, there's the autobahn. It's the main Hamburg-Bremen autobahn. So I got caught in not a minute thing to be seen from either way. So I looked underneath the bridge, no. So I come back and said, no, no, size of the bridge. You think, sir? Good, good, good. So now, Tom, and you and the Sunday, on the autobahn, now, and stay here, we'll stay up here. And I said, I'll get in touch with the, okay, the quarters. So Conky and I went down. Now, I think it would be impossible to get a shot. Now, at this time, the next day, we were told not to fire on anyone unless we were fired at. So we were getting near the end. Okay, so I was on one side of the van, Conky was on the other side. So I walked across the street and I'm coming back, and there's a little shell. It must have been a mortar, because it could have, and it just hit past Conky's time. And I went flying. But I never got hit. So we see, I thought these bullets had stopped firing, but no. So the next day, next morning, we seen the German infantry way at the top of the hill. They must have seen the fact they went in the east, and I saw come down the road from Iron Hamburg. And about 1 o'clock, this German soldier came out, and a big pushback from Hamburg came up. So I flew through the country and said, look, so we just said, there's damp suits on, you're completely, you know, very. So I took my berry off and my headset and put it on. I jumped in. She said, I'd have over. So I jumped down and this old boy stopped at his bike. Nah, I'm done. And then this bus is out. Hey, up here, we're going late. I said, nah, nah, nah. Yeah, commandant. Now, they're looking at it. I was about 5 minutes before the boy says, oh, please. Yeah, he took his bike now. He didn't kill. He was going in a 48-hour leave. So the week got up and I had spoke good German, and he got down to us, how he was going to leave, and he got 2 parcels here. So we worked our way up to the squad, up to the squad leader, and opened the parcels, and one was full of German sausages, and I was women's clothes. So we just left them, but the boy was taken away prisoner. And then the next day, we look in, come down to a very big armored car, the motor car came up, the white flag. So this was a German officer, and he wanted to see our divisional commander. He spoke English, good English. So I took out a company and I said, he wants to see the divisional commander. So we walked him away. So we've been away for an hour, the command and the driver and the watch stayed there beside him. So we came back and the car went up and back to Hamburg. Now we did the fort we were coming, but we were told afterwards, he came up to tell the divisional commander that the RAF had been dropping leaflets saying that this Hamburg was the only port left for supplies to come through. And if they didn't surrender, they would bomb it, and this was losing the supplies when they get in. So this was him going to tell us that Dönitz was in charge of the army, and he was in Hamburg. But Himmler was in Hamburg, and sure as Himmler would say was in Hamburg. But he was leaving the next day, and once he left, they would surrender. So sure enough, the next day, they were doing the same vehicle, turned around, all the dance come down and into Hamburg. And our ship was fired.
What was the situation in Hamburg?
I couldn't understand how folk could live. There was a mass of many red buildings, and yet there were people coming out. We lived in cellars. But what a mess it was in. So we just started that night, we sat beside the tank, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, we wakened up. All of us were waking up. Right, lads, on your tanks, right? Heading for the Kiel Canal, because we were afraid they would blow the bridges up over the Kiel Canal. This is further up north. So away we go in the tank, and on the way up, it came over to us, the war in Europe had finished.
How did you feel at V Day?
Well, we were told that, we were told about this little village, one troop to each village, and we were to see the burgomaster and ask them if there were any Germans in the place, if they were. Get their arms, or any arms at all in the police. So we went up to this little village and Cooking, I went to see the burgomaster, and he was a cheery old boy. He was going to say he was going to get a snap and that. And they had no troops in there, but guns and couple of old blunderbusses and all this kind of carrying with it. So we just went in. And went down to see his colleague, and he said, "Now, look, lads, no fraternising. That's the army command. No fraternising at all." Okay.
This is before actual V Day celebration. This is
after the V Day. Everything declared. The war finished actually on May the 4th. We took us in. So when we got back to the village, when I told the boys that we were ready for us to come back, they were not sending anybody around the tanks at all. No soul. So we went to this woman's house where the end of the tank was. And here the woman in the village had a long table, a table puts in it. They were serving the men, the Russians. They were as well pleased the war was finished as we were. But we said, "You're not supposed to be fat now." They come and see that sort of thing. So we went up then, we were told we were to take prisoners and separate the SS from the Wehrmacht. And this was done, and we went up, and there was a hospital there. And there were two hospitals. And it was pitiful. There were men there, minus a leg. And this was all done from the Eastern Front from Russia, just through frostbite. So they were that severely injured that they were just amputating rather than. And that was it. No. Then we were told to go back to Belgium. We're getting brand new tanks. We've got a very comic tanks with a lovely big gun in it to go back into Berlin for the victory parade.
So you picked up Comets. What did you think of the Comets? I mean, didn't fight with them.
They didn't fight them at all, but they're a lovely big. They had about, what, 40 times, 17 pounder on them. Never fired one in, and I'm not going to fire that at all. So, when we got to Berlin, we had a barracks, those barracks.
So you moved to Berlin, that's where you were sent?
Yeah, I was sent to Berlin. And this is the point, with to go through from Hamburg to Berlin, you had to go through the Russian sector. They had quite a bit of that, because we had to go back to Berlin to get beer for our mess. And we had an awful job trying to get back again with these bloody Russians. Actually, that's when, remember, they put they cut Berlin off from getting supplies at all. Remember, the air got miles away from that thing. However, all our friends went to these barracks, and all we did then was...
What was it like passing through the Russian sector?
Well, we had the... All I can remember is Berlin with a lovely sergeant's mess.
Okay, well, let's talk about... first, the victory parade. What do you remember of that?
Well, very good. We had Khrushchev, Churchill, and... what the other one? Roosevelt come across. They were all there. But it was just a victory parade. You know, everybody was happy, then it was all finished.
But you were in your tanks.
Oh, right, yeah. Because all the tanks were raising, you had to pass them and dip your gun and salute as you pass, you know. Yeah.
Then, and what about this sergeant's mess? Where was that?
Sergeant's mess was in a big barracks. Now, it wasn't far from Monty's house, because we had to be guarding Monty's house.
Hang on, tell me about the mess first, if you see what I mean.
Sergeant's mess. Sergeant's mess was good. And at that time, you played sports in the morning. You did maintenance in the morning, sports in the afternoon, and you drunk at night. And if you drunk at night, the officers used to come down to your mess and they invite us up to their mess. And it was drink. And I did the, you know, I like to drink. I wouldn't go into the police station. I would be doing that, like the DTs. So I called him and said, "You can't wait." I said, "No, I'm going to send him." Of course, the RSA gets paid. But they messed him. They don't do a dollar's mess. They don't do a bit of drink. So I disobeyed the room when my mate and I went to Vietnam. We're done with that. However, Congress said, "Well, John, this is the time now." He says, "Are you staying on in the army?" I was a territory. I said, "No." I said, "I'm coming out." But I mean, I had a long time to wait to get out, because I mean, I was 28. But they were all regulars. Conky wasn't a regular. But he couldn't be at the tennis game. He said, "Well, I'm going to stay on for another 5 years, Johnny." I was going to stay on for another. Conky answered, "I can't get out quick in a month." And I was 7 years in 1990. I said, "No, I said, I've had enough."
Now, sorry, Cam.
I said, "Come on." I said, "No." He said, "Oh, you better watch your drink." And he said, "Oh, good. Couldn't wait." He said, "Oh, you with it?" I said, "I'm sending nothing." So this coordinator there, the colonel sent for me. He said, "I like a good life for you in front of the army for this war." I said, "No, sir, I've done my time." I said, "I'm very sorry to hear that." I said, "Go right to keep you. Yeah, I think we're threatening to go to Korea." He said, "But," he said, "that's what you want." He said, "Fair enough." I said, "But you have to leave the regiment." I said, "Can I appreciate it? Because you want to get the police to get built up again for strength." I said, "That's okay." He said, "Well, fine." He said, "Well, I have a mess next night." I was at the parts and I said, "Right, I'm going to fuck the same way." However, but the next mess night, about 3 of us went away.
And when did you leave them?
In Berlin.
When?
When? I couldn't say that. It would be what? It was me when the war finished. It would be
roughly.
It must be getting in November, I think. Because I went to ECB.
Is there anything first about guarding Montgomery just before we leave?
Yeah. When Monty, in Monty's house, Monty was in residence. He had an offer, 2 officers, a sergeant, and 14 men. If Monty wasn't in the house, he had the sergeant, 2 officers at the door, and 14 men. And he in the house, and in the tree, every tree was a button, like the lamp and the guard room. If you get any, you have to just press the button rather than move. And very, very quiet. But the other one behind was with the police station. I had to go there, and it was there with 12 men. Now, the German police couldn't arrest any troops. But if there were trouble with troops at all, they came to me, and I had to do 12 men, don't think where the do was. And we left it up, crew of those folk, and took them back to jail. And then the police contacted their residents, and they took them away. And that's all we had to do.
So you left in November. What happened then? Where did you go to?
Well, you see, you're going back to join the 15th Scottish Regiment. So I wanted to become a
15th Scottish?
Scottish Regiment. I the 15th Scottish Regiment. So, right, I mean, you told me to look at you, said, Hanover, probably. So the 3 of us went away in this wee 1500-hour kit. I thought, good for you. So we got up to Hanover, went to the boiler room, and that was 21 squadron there. The other 2 lads went to another squadron. So it goes into the took me to the squadron office, that squadron was in this big house, and it goes in. And the sergeant major was there, we were waiting on my arrival. And it was partitioned off, one was like a mess room, and then there was a dining room. So I come in and said, "Welcome to the 15th Scots," and I said, "Well, I'm not the head of the 15th Scots." So I said, "You don't want any messages?" And they're having a big dance there in the village. He said, "They're all down there." He said, "They know you're coming." She said, "I stay behind." She said, "I've got a meal ready for you." And here they had young German women in the place doing all this stuff, you know, cooking and whatever. Fine. So I go down and a nice meal. They come and she was like a drink. I said, "Now look, before you go on, I said, how do you pay your mess bill?" I said, "We used to pay them every month in Berlin, you know, we'd pay them in." I said, "Listen," he says, "whilst you're here, you can drink as much and as like as much." And of course, you know, I hate this because with no vehicle, they're handed in. I said, "We've got more money than we did." So I said, "Every evening." And I said, "Oh, God, is it coming for me?" So I said, "There's going to be a couple here tomorrow." So this guy really came up to me the following day. And he was a young man who had been in the desert with us. He said, "How the hell did you come in here?" He said, "I thought you were in the first start." I said, "Oh, I'm but they're regulars." I said, "But I wasn't a regular, I was a territorial. I joined them before you." "Oh, right." He said, "Well, look," he says, you have had lilop." I said, "What has lilop?" He said, "Leave in lieu of python." I said, "I've never heard of it." Well, he said, "No, they wouldn't tell the first time, they've gone away." I said, "Well, you said 2 years ago." I said, "Oh, can I?" I said, "Needs you up in Italy and all that." "Well," he says, "you had dealt with 6 weeks leave." He said, "Now, see, you get it." He said, "You go away and leave tomorrow." So I had to go down there, and I got home for 6 weeks. And it was great because, I mean, the time I got back, it was just a matter of them packing it, because they had no vehicles, going back to Patrick Camp. I started my first.
So you moved, the 15th Scottish moved. I'm not sure who these 15 Scottish are. They're an armoured regiment, were they? Or
well, they had no vehicles.
Originally.
They must have been. I think they were infantry. But no, they must have had vehicles of some sort. But they had nothing when I was there. The 15 Scots, they told me. But I thought they were infantry. But He had no vehicle, but unless mine was an infantry air cavalry officer.
So then they went back, you moved with them to Catterick?
Catterick camp, yeah. And then we were there for 2 days, and we got a medical. And this is another thing I've got now, I forget. This sergeant was well up to it all. He said, "John, he's going to get your medical here tomorrow. He's how you feeling?" I said, "Feeling fine, great. Now make sure that you're going to get a good medical." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because if there's anything wrong with you, this is the time to find out in case you get a pension." It's enough for a week hour. I goes in, and a young M.O. "Man, how are you feeling, sir?" "Fine, great." "Feeling all right?" "Yes, all right." "We've got." Well, I said, "But I just have got from my mother that my father didn't go to me at the hospital with the tuberculosis." He says, "What?" "It's been tuberculosis." "Well, no, sir, wasn't it? Nothing wrong." "Oh," I said, "I think I better give you an examination." So on the table for the examination. Nothing wrong with me. But if I hadn't said that, I was just going to get sent out. Could be nothing wrong with me. I should have got to give me a third examination, and there was nothing wrong with it at all. So we went from there to York and got demobbed and went home.
And when, what month were you demobilised?
No.
Roughly. You left Hanover in November, so... May 46.
Yeah.
And how did you get back into civilian life? I mean...
Well, what the name is... he was the local commander. He went back and got my job back and I went back again.
So there's no problem there?
No.
And how did you find that? I mean, you'd been a sergeant. You'd had a lot of responsibility. Yeah. You'd been in action all that time. How did you settle down?
You settled down all right. And I tell you something. I mean, the Chucks had a welcome home dance for all the troops that were coming home, you know. And I went there, and that's where I met my wife. I went to school with her. I met and we got married. So great, I assumed that we'd all around the world when we come back and we went to school. And their school's only up the road, it's closed down there, so we went to school there. And I've been very, very fortunate. I had a good wife, a good family, and good health.
Did you have any after effects of the war?
None at all. Sometimes I'd pull out of my sleep, sometimes waking up and been dreaming about something, you know.
But nothing serious?
No, didn't cause you any real terrible problems.
And you rejoined the Fife and Forfar, didn't you? How did that come about?
Well, as I said, I married Maureen, and Maureen's cousin, who had been in the army as well, he joined the territories when he came home. And he asked me if I'd join. I said, "Oh, no, no." So I said, "I'm going to come out." I said, "I'm going to join the Christmas Club." But how it persevered. And we had a child at that time. And he said, "What about it, John? Come on." So we're desperate for people. So I said, "Well, okay, I'll come down." So I went down to the senior squad leader at that time. He said, "We're desperate for men."
Which squadron was it?
I think it was a squadron. So he said, "Right." He said, "We're going to camp in Creel." It was the first time I'd been to along here in Fife. So I went along and I said, "What, joined a trooper?" "No, it's anything else, just a trooper," because, I mean, they all had their NCOs fixed with this thing. You know, they had a squadron, but I joined a trooper. I'm quite happy. And he said, "What do you want to be then?" I said, "Well, anything at all." He said, "Well, I'll put you in as a guard commander." He said, "I will make you a lance corporal." So he went away in the schemes and whatnot, and he couldn't work at night. He says, "There's no one that could do the mark." He says, "I'm going to make you a sergeant." I said, "Well, I didn't want it." I said, "Well, I feel rotten because I've always been in." He said, "But you've got the experience of the sergeant." Then I finished up. I was what? Didn't come out till 1962, but I finished up as sergeant major of the squadron then.
And did you enjoy it? You were unwilling at the start.
Yes, I wasn't keen at the time, but I really enjoyed it. I liked the camps because that's when the only thing you got really acted as an active regiment. You know, you got vehicles issued to you when you went.
They were on armoured cars then, weren't they?
Armoured cars, yeah. And wee dingoes and whatnot, you know. But these wee dingoes were ideal for recce because they could go fast, reverse, and they couldn't front. But they were very good. But I enjoyed it. I mean, and of course, it was just peanut soldiers, you know, and nothing serious going on.